everybody. Welcome to another CISA Student Division podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Multidisciplinary Subcommittee, and we are so happy to have a special guest with us today. And while he will introduce himself, you know, as we go along, I just want to welcome back all our listeners to our fourth podcast for the year. So exciting. I think we can get into it. My name is Denisha September. I am the chairperson of the Multidisciplinary Subcommittee, and I am so happy to be here today. And I'm so excited for our guest. Today's podcast is a little bit different to the last one. In that we will be having a different guest, of course, but a guest that is working in a different field as well. But I guess I'll allow my guest to introduce himself. Lebu, do you mind just telling us a little bit more about you, who you are, and also what you do?
Okay. So hi, Denisha. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Hi, listeners as well. My name is Lebogang Tau, but you can call me Lebo. So I'm currently finishing off my master's in research psychology at WITS, and I'm employed for Standard Bank, and I currently do root cause analysis. And yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. So you definitely have, you know, a background in psychology. Do you mind telling us a little bit about your journey? I'm sure the listeners out there are a little bit interested as to how you managed to get into the position that you're in right now.
Yeah, so my journey starts off a little bit unorthodox. So in my beginning of my studies, I was actually a Bachelor of Science student. I was majoring in chemistry and physics and math and all of that. And I had a major in psychology. So in my first year, I was just basically getting fed up with the science world, because the science world was basically filled with absolutes. You know what I mean? Like, the answer had to be correct to the final decimal. Whereas in psychology, I felt that it was more engaging, because what I was learning, more about human nature and sort of how we function, how we behave, and, you know, how we develop. And sort of the answers in psychology were more interpretive and subjective, and took into account the entire, you know, the entire experience of what it means to be a human. Following that, I made the decision to switch to a full Bachelor of Arts, majoring in psychology and philosophy as well. So I started with that, and I really enjoyed psychology, because it really took us from, you know, the moment you were born as a baby, like how you develop and just like milestones and how you develop, all the way up to adulthood. Also, you know, how you function in a community from a health perspective. So I just grew more and more interested in the field. And upon graduating in my undergrad, I decided to pursue organizational psychology, because I wanted to sort of apply all of the insights that I had learned about humans and human behavior in a work context, right? That kind of sparked my journey into psychology. And then I started working, and I didn't want to be sort of pigeonholed into human capital, because I thought, like, as much as human capital aims to deal with, like, you know, the human being in corporate, it's inundated with a lot of bureaucracy and organizational processes. So I wanted to sort of like have a free range in how I can psychology in different environments within the corporate space.
Sure. I have one last question, you know, regarding your journey. Is your journey and, you know, where you're at right now anything like you imagined? I think we all start off our careers and we think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. But is you know, where you are right now in your journey? Is it what you imagined for yourself?
No, it's really not what I imagined. So, you know, as a bright-eyed student, you have all these grand ideas based on what you've learned, and you just want to get into it and sort of change the world, for example. But without taking into account the broader context in which you exist in, you know, ultimately, our employers have the bottom line to meet. They, you know, it's a bank. They want to make money ultimately, you know. But it's an exciting journey because it's not psychology applied directly. However, the little tricks of the trade have really helped me in how I show up to work, and also how I conduct myself and how I sort of execute on my duties.
So obviously, you know, I think a lot of people will relate, especially when you mentioned that, you know, it's not necessarily what you imagined. But I always tell, you know, my clients at work, you know, you are where you are for a reason, and you are where you need to be. But tell me, within your profession that you're currently in, what kind of social issues have you come across, and how do they impact your work? You know, especially for somebody who is coming from a psychological background and moving into corporate, what kind of issues have you picked up in your work environment, and how have they really, like I said, impacted your work, and how do you also address them when they arise?
Okay, so I think how I these social issues is more on how the employees engage with work, right? So I'm more centered on the people actually executing the role. I'm interested in how the work affects them. So basically, I look at the interaction with the role and what comes with it. So, for example, a majority of the people sort of working in such fields might experience issues such as, you know, burnout, trying to navigate a good work-life balance. And yeah, so basically I wouldn't say it's a social issue per se, but I mean, it is kind of an issue if, you know, you have to provide for your family, you have to, you know, carry out your job, but then there's certain barriers that come between that. For example, the COVID-19 pandemic in itself completely rocked how we engage with work from working remotely now. So that in itself, it just removed the barrier between work-life balance. You know? One of the hardest things is helping our colleagues and employees transition effectively to still be able to carry out their jobs and still maintain a proper work-life balance.
That's true, especially with a work-from-home situation. I think in the beginning, we all thought, okay, we're staying in for a reason, you know, where we're trying to do our best to save our country, and, you know, but eventually it does get to you as well, you know. Eventually your workspace and your home life is very much the same place. But tell me, Lebu, having worked in, you know, having had experience in the psychology industry not workspace, but just, you know, our sphere of things, our side of things. How have you, you know, encountered other psychology professionals in your workspace? Do you work with them? So industrial psychologists, counselors, do you work with them? And how do you usually engage with them if you do work with them?
Yes, I do work with them. Actually, it's more of a collaborative effort. So I would primarily say I do work with counselors and some industrial psychologists. from a perspective of, you know, looking at initiatives to increase certain metrics, like, you know, employee well-being, and getting motivation, getting our staff motivated, and the main sort of form of engagement that I normally initiate is that sort of on a quarterly basis or so, I would run a variety of sort of diagnostics to sort of gauge where everyone is, and is there like sort of lag. So for example, if maybe there's a problem or an alarm rate of absenteeism, or there's a high turnover in a certain environment, I would drill down, sort of conduct some focus interviews to see why are people leaving. You know, why is there such a high turnover rate? And the sort of the results that I would get from the engagements with the staff, I'd normally table it forward to certain service providers that might bring sort of an out-of-house solution on how to fix these challenges. So from a counseling point of view, I've worked a lot with ICAS.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So we love ICAS here.
It's been a rock. ICAS has been a rock, especially with, you know, the pandemic and the loss associated with it, the job insecurity. So it really came through for us, and we had certain sessions where we would sort of equip and sort of strengthen our employees' access to resources that are centered around their mental health.
Just piggybacking off, you know, the last thing you just said, you mentioned mental health, and you know, working in a corporate environment and knowing what you know now, you know, being a professional in both the psychology and the corporate environment, what would you, I'm almost wanting to know, you know, knowing what you know, what is, or how important is mental health to you, especially, you know, when you're assisting employees, you know, is it as important as physical health, as, you know, social health?
It's extremely important, because actually the last session we had with ICAS, it was sort of a three-part series where sort of driving the sort of awareness on mental health. And the first part of the series was actually just educating our colleagues what mental health is, you know, and it actually included debunking certain myths, you know, how to sort of identify signs of sort of mental illness in yourself and with others, and then obviously not from a diagnostic point of view, but just sharing light. And the common consensus around the sessions were, you know, the staff, they were more empathetic on what their colleagues are going through and what they themselves are going through. They're gonna, oh, actually this is normal. This is a normal stress reaction. Oh, when my colleague could not do this, okay, it makes sense, you know. It just gave them a holistic view, and it made them more understanding. And that in itself, it sort of allowed them to relate better to themselves, you know what I mean? Yes, because it was very comprehensive. It even touched, you know, sort of the medical treatment around certain mental illnesses such as anxiety and depression, and sort of it gave practical tips on, you know, how to help lower your anxiety, you know, gave like sort of practical steps. It suggested some form of meditation as well. So they left there actual toolkit on, like, okay, if I feel the way I'm feeling, I'm not the only one. I can recognize this, and I can actively work towards improving it.
Yeah,
it was very good. And one thing that came out as well was the link between mental health and physical health, which I feel like was a very good angle that sort of ICAS had approached it, because, you know, we all, as humans, we all know, for example, our physical health. We all know how bad we feel when you have flu or and we know what led to us having flu. Like, maybe you were exposed to the rain and you got sick, or you were near someone who had flu and you caught it, right? So mental health is it's also something like that. But then let's say the environment that you might sort of develop a mental illness, it won't be a physical environment. It would be like the stresses and your emotional responses to the environment. So I think that link was crucial in understanding that, you know, if you want to improve your physical health, you eat your vegetables, you get some eggs, right? And it kind of makes you stronger physically. And the same applies to mental health. You know, you do certain things that gets you in the right mental state to function at your peak.
And produce great work. You know.
Great work and satisfied with your job. Job satisfaction is a very key thing in retaining good talent.
Yeah. Very important, especially in a high stress environment like the corporate environment. But tell me, Lebu, you know, I'm not too sure, you know, how many people you know in the industry. I'm assuming you know a lot of people because you work with people, you know, on a daily basis. But overall, if you can, what do you think about, you know, the entire corporate industry at this point in time? Do you see a little bit of a lack of collaboration, you know, between the psychological industry and the corporate industry? And if there is, what would you sort of suggest, you know, happen for us to, you know, create more connections with each other and obviously collab more? I mean, I love how you rave about, you know, all of these workshops and all of these, you know, interventions that you're being a part of that assists, you know, not just you, but the employees as well.
Yes. So I think there is a lot of alignment, actually, contrary to popular belief. I think corporate is investing a lot into services of mental health professionals, psychologists. I think they are investing a lot. And with corporate, it depends on the size of the organization, right? Yeah. And so from what I've seen, most of my networks within psychology, right, are industrial psychologists, you know, people I went to school with. And I think they're all sort of like scattered around the major companies, and they're doing brilliant work. We collab on certain projects that they need assistance from, and vice versa. But I think what can create a better synergy, right, is if, you know, psychologists or other mental health professionals and how they position their services, or they sort of how they create their approach, you know. I think one of the, for me, in my opinion, one of the deficiencies with certain mental health professionals or psychologists is that they position their work as sort of isolated and want to offer a blanket approach, you know, to the corporate. So for example, if I'm consulting for a mine, versus if I'm consulting for an IT company, those are different work environments. One is more labor intensive and manual labor intensive, and others would be more sort of intellectually based work, you know, work that can be done anyway, regardless of your physical location. So I think certain, you know, mental health organizations or psychology professionals, they need to have sort of flexibility in their approach to sort of fit in the niche sort of organizations that they deal with, and in-house as well, you know. Most companies, they do have in-house employee wellness, people and culture. They do have a lot of in-house that, and in those instances, the problem now becomes with like certain departments within the organization. And right now, I'm not speaking on behalf of my organization. Just in general, there seems to be a, how can I put it, a lack of quantifying the benefits of it, because, you know, companies are profit driven. They want to say, if I pay size 100k to do this initiative, what is the return? You know, so certain departments look at it in that sense, and you can't really quantify the positive effects of mental health. You can't really quantify that. You can qualify it, but you can't quantify it.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah, and it can be frustrating. I know I also work in an EAP environment. It can be very frustrating, and not just for the companies, but for the counseling relationships that need to be built, like you said. You know, it does need to be, you know, a lot more specialized, because that's more beneficial for your client. And I agree with you. You know, there needs to be, okay, there's definitely collaboration, but there's definitely also still a little bit of a gap, you know, that we need to work on together. Yeah, we need to sort of come together, you know, and be like, hey, how can we, you know, fix this? Or how can we find a way, like you said, to quantify? Even though obviously there's going to be things that you will never be able to quantify, but just maybe getting better at explaining and justifying, like you said, why certain.
And I feel like, you know what, just to add more, I think government institutions actually, they would benefit an awful lot, because the work that government employees do, it has sort of a knock-on effect to the public. Public. So if you like public sector employees, I don't think they have enough support. Like, for example, if you look at high stress public sector occupations such as, you know, police and nurses, I think you know what, we need to devote a lot of resources to the well-being of those public servants.
That's true. You know? Yeah, you're right. It does have a ripple effect.
I did an internship at a SEPS in my hometown in 2015. Mm-hmm. And one thing that was striking to me, you know, was the amount of suicides.
Sure. Yeah.
I think if we can research, there's a lot of, there's a high rate of suicides in these stressful public service professions, and not enough being done to divert or to prevent these from happening.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, I can believe that. And yo, I wish I kind of, you know, it was a podcast on its own, because that's something that we definitely do need to unpack, and hopefully, you know, this will inspire us to do more. Yes. Tell me, Lebu, though, just to close off, if you were to, you know how kids have career days sometimes, you know, during the course of the year, and or probably towards the end of the year, and kids will come with their parents or the school will organize professionals to come in and present, you know, their jobs. If you were to present, you know, your workspace and just the position that you hold to, you know, our listeners, what would you say? How would you go about selling yourself, if you don't mind?
That is a very interesting question. So I think how would I sell myself to the young people wanting to venture into psychology would be first to debunk the myth that psychology is therapy.
Right? When you say
studying psychology, they're like, oh, are you reading my mind? Do you want to psychoanalyze me? You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the main assumption that people make, like, oh, I'm going to deal with people on that kind of basis. But it's not that. You know, you learn fundamental things about, you know, how humans live, how we behave, how, you know, the processes that govern how we relate to others. So that in itself, when you go into psychology, I don't think you should go into psychology with the end goal in mind. You should go into psychology with the intent to know as much, because psychology is not a prescriptive. It doesn't say that, you know, if you do this, they will do that. You know, like, you know, these TikTok videos, there can be like five psychological hacks to make people respect you or to love you more. It's not that. We don't want that. You know, the nice thing about psychology is that we are taught how to find out about you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are taught how to find out. And even what you find out, it's not something that you can generalize to everyone alive. You know, it's sample specific, and you know what I mean? Sample specific, it's related to the construct that you're trying to find out. So in that, it's like it depends on what you're trying to find out, and also the rigor involved in how accurate or not how accurate, but how close to reality is your findings.
And I feel like you're speaking like a true researcher. You're right. Psychology is so much broader than that. You know, we often forget that psychology is not what, you know, American television tells you, like you said. It's not always therapy. You know, sitting on a couch and you know, pouring out your soul. It's working corporate like you. You know, it's working with employees and, you know, making sure that they're comfortable within their daily lives, because you are very much aware of, you know, that relationship between employee, you know, the employee's well-being and the work that they produce. You know, so
And also sort of like taking into account a human being holistically, you know? Not just thinking of him as just an employee, because ultimately, I think, you know, we're all trying to search for our purpose in life, and we want to contribute to society, you know, whether it's directly or indirectly. So it's very crucial to have that holistic understanding of individuals.
It is. Sure, you're a human after all. You're not a robot as soon as you walk into the workplace.
Exactly.
But Lebu, you know, just to encourage the listeners, I think you sold yourself very well. Thank you very much. I mean, I definitely, you know, I'm looking to do your job next. I'm joking. But thank you for presenting it the way, you know, the way you did. I think it was very insightful. And there's definitely a lot that we could learn from, you know, the corporate environment and just knowing that there's already a link, you know? You know, and you know, corporate isn't what we always think. I think when you're not familiar with corporate, you won't know what's going on.
I didn't know what was going on until I was in it myself.
goodness. And I'm sure everybody feels the exact same way. So guys, it's not what you think. I think once you really either meet somebody who works in corporate, or you know, you work in corporate yourself, you get somewhat of a, you know, realistic view of what it actually is. It's a lot more involved than we think. You know, there's already a link between psychology and the corporate environment. And thank you so much, Lebu, for portraying that.
100%.
Yeah. Is there anything, you know, that you'd like to say to our listeners, perhaps to the listeners who are looking to, you know, join corporate, whether it's in psychology or in anything else? But is this, you know, some encouraging words that you can share with us?
yes, I actually do. I just thought about it now. So one thing that was some words of encouragement that I want to give to fellow, you know, psychology majors and professionals is, you know, you need to don't have any imposter syndrome when you go into corporate. You know? It's very interesting. You get to corporate, depending on the industry, you know, that people maybe who did engineering, who did math, computer science, and they all come with, you know, easily identifiable skills, like, hey, I can build software, or I can balance financial statements, I can I don't know, I can build something, right? And often as a psychology graduate coming into that space, it's easy to think of you don't have any outright identifiable skills that you can sell. However, I want our listeners, who especially want to take this path, to appreciate all the nuances that you've learned across your journey, like the handling of ambiguity, you know, your ability to structure coherent arguments that relate to human beings. You have the infinite potential to learn all, like, I won't say you learn all, but you can learn what you need to learn to get the job done.
Yeah, that's so true. Yes, and there's a space for you, there's a place for you. Yeah,
there's a place for you, and once you get it, you must know that you deserve to be there just like anyone else. You're not any less, you're not any more. You deserve it, and you're going to do great.
Yes, sure, you're so right. thank you for that. Sure, that was so encouraged. I was encouraged. But thank you so much, Lebu. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. You know, when this podcast, you know, extends, we get to hear you again. But for now, like I said, thank you so much for availing yourself for this podcast. We really appreciate it here at the Multidisciplinary Subcommittee. We appreciate your input. And yeah, that is all for today, or for this podcast, actually. I'd encourage everybody to listen to the actual series. We are live on, you know, all social media platforms. Just look us up at, you know, Sciences Student Division. And yeah, have a listen to you know, our past and our future podcasts. And let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any ideas for any other topics or any other professionals that you would like to hear from. And yeah, we will definitely do our best to provide more podcasts. But thank you so much, Lebu.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Denisha.
Alrighty. Bye, everyone.